I have this kind of frustrated fascination with the way people respond to someone else's bad news. It first struck me about 19 years ago. I was pregnant, and things were not going well. It was during the early stages of the 23 weeks of bed rest I would experience that calls would come in and visitors would stop by. Everyone was so positive and upbeat, and all that made me feel was mad. I was scared, and I was angry that this was happening to me, and I just wanted that to be acknowledged. The positivity actually felt dismissive. It made me feel alone, and it put a tremendous amount of pressure on me. Like, if things didn't work out, it's probably because I just wasn't positive enough. It was so much pressure. I wondered why no one was able to just sit and be mad and scared with me. Fast forward now to the days of Facebook. And social media lays bare this hyper-positive response to people's bad news. You've got this, and you're so strong. Take up the space that I'm hoping might be used for some good old-fashioned empathy. Empathy is the ability to feel the emotions that are or may be present, especially in a time of suffering. But empathy can be tough. We're given plenty of suggestion that expressing our feelings is a sign of weakness. But empathy, the ability to feel all the feelings, is an important step in expressing compassion. I've been a bit of a student of compassion and life coaching over the last 4 years. That practice revealed to me a recipe of sorts for compassion. I would suggest that you need four ingredients to make compassion. First, awareness. We must be aware that there is suffering present. Second, inquiry. We need to check our thoughts about the suffering that we just became aware of. Third, empathy. We must allow ourselves to feel what it would be like to experience that suffering. And finally, action. We must do something to alleviate the suffering, or at the very least, to be sure that we are not adding to it. All four of these are necessary for the full expression of compassion. I suggest that if you're missing any of these ingredients, you might still make something tasty, but you haven't actually made a true compassion pie. So, if we feel that we must skip the empathy for the sake of not appearing weak, then we can't quite move through the process of compassion to truly alleviate our suffering. When I was in a dark, uncertain, and scary time, I wanted to be allowed to feel and express the full range of emotions that came with the situation. I wanted to hear something that might have sounded like this. Oh, gosh, Leah, my heart is hurting. I am sad that you have to go through this. Please know that you are held, supported, and loved no matter what happens. You've got a great support network, and I too am here for you. I am a safe place for you to acknowledge all that this means to you throughout this journey. But for now, would Tuesday or Thursday be better for me to drop off a meal? Something like that is what I really wanted to hear. What I wanted was to acknowledge that this is scary. I just wanted to look at it, not dwell on it, but acknowledge it. Can we look in the painful places? I see now that the ability to do that is in fact necessary for the full expression of compassion for ourselves and for others.
Suffering and the end of suffering. Healing trauma with the help of the Buddha. Speaking of suffering, I would like to acknowledge that we are on the historical land of the Menominee, Winnebago, and Dakota peoples. I would like to dedicate the merit of this talk to ending the suffering of all beings, especially to the suffering of Black and Brown people. I dedicate myself to help end the violence of racism and embrace the humanity of my Black and Brown siblings. Happy Juneteenth. Happy Pride. May we all walk in confidence and beauty, hand in hand, realizing true freedom and happiness. The Buddha taught, as you're probably familiar, about suffering and the end of suffering, the reality of impermanence, and that there is no separate self. I have seen so clearly the reality of impermanence in the last year and how interconnected we are with everyone, everywhere. Usually, I think that I somehow walk around in life in a little bit of a daze, thinking things will just keep on like they've been keeping on, ignoring the reality of sickness, old age, and death. That's how the pandemic in the last year has just knocked that over. My hope here today is that I'd like to share with you some ways that I've been able to get some traction in creating less suffering for myself, to offer you some stories and tools that might be meaningful. So the kid's story was not really a kid's story, but one bright pearl. How can everything be one bright pearl? Maybe in this way. If you look at really closely at a pearl, it shimmers, it kind of reflects everything in all directions around it, not so much as a mirror or a diamond. But if I think of it this way, it helps me understand how I am like a pearl. I am always reflecting all that is around me, and I am interconnected with everyone and everything. Xuanzha stubbed his toe and woke up to reality. Almost everyone I've ever met that's gone on a spiritual journey did not start out because everything was going super great in their life. They didn't say, oh, I think it would be so fun to sit and stare at the floor for hours sitting on a meditation cushion. Suffering brought me to Buddhism. In 2012, I was diagnosed with cancer and I thought I might die. And I thought, I don't want to die a jerk. And I think if I stay on the way I'm going, I will. So I started meditating in the Zen tradition. Now I had already been meditating since 1983, but I still struggled with my anger and grief. I was still using these outdated survival strategies that got me through my early life, but they were not working so well. We do all suffer. Some of us suffer early. Some of us suffer late. But eventually, everyone realizes the impermanence of life and the unfulfilling nature of more stuff. I want to add here that I, as a white person in the United States, have had amazing privilege that I didn't earn. And I have not had to deal with the oppression of systemic racism. So, after realizing that I wasn't the person I wanted to be, and knowing on a deep, deep level that I would not live forever, I applied myself to sitting meditation, or Zazen. Za means sitting. Zen means meditation. I found a teacher. It took me a while. I had to go all the way to Minnesota at Clouds and Waters Zen Center, but a teacher I did find. I went to silent retreats or sessions where they are very specific about the way you do things, the way you eat, the way you walk, when you bow. And I had to be quiet. I took Jukai, which is taking formal Buddhist vows. And then I was fortunate enough to be able to take home leaving ordination in the Soto Zen tradition. So I had this image of what it was like to be a Buddhist monk, very intensely sitting still in one position, never moving no matter what. To be fair, there's a Buddhist teacher called Nagarjuna. He lived in the first century, and he said that we should practice as if our hair were on fire. Wow. So why do all this? I guess I felt really motivated to change. There's a whole discourse that I could give about how I'm not my own favorite self-improvement project. I'll save that for another time. I found that the more that I can embrace myself just as I am, the more I really can act in loving ways to everyone in my life. I found that by going deeply into these Buddhist practices, it's given me a way to embrace who I really am with great love and tenderness, and to heal some of the old patterns and wounds from my past, the things that were not very skillful. The funny thing is that the way that I've gotten there is through being more tender, not tough. So even though sometimes I do sit for hours in meditation retreats in silence, and I have learned a lot of Buddhist rituals and chants, what works the best is when I can extend compassion to myself right where I am. So I want to share a meditation practice with you that I learned at the Zen Mountain Monastery when I was there last fall in upstate New York. It's called the Four Immeasurables. And we chanted it every morning at the end of morning zazen. It goes like this. May all beings be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May all beings know happiness and the root of happiness. May all beings live in sympathetic joy, rejoicing in the happiness of others. May all beings live in equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and delusion. I want to share it with you because it was super helpful for me during my first week-long session or silent retreat. I was having a lot of trouble sitting on my cushion. Part of what happens when I sit still in meditation, that whatever it is that I've been avoiding comes up, and it gets my attention. So I found doing this meditation, repeating this meditation to myself internally, was really helpful. So I'd like us to do it together. To begin, go ahead and sit comfortably, maybe rearrange yourself so that you can sit maybe either cross-legged on a cushion on the floor or maybe on a chair with your feet on the floor. Just sit in such a way that you feel grounded and that your hips are slightly above your knees if you can. Take a couple of deep breaths in and exhale a little more fully than you normally would. You can bring your attention to your heart center if you like. You might imagine a feeling of warmth or maybe a brightness there. And then you can, if you like, bring to mind just a small difficulty to start with. And then you can extend this meditation to yourself. May I be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May I know happiness and the root of happiness. May I live in sympathetic joy, rejoicing in the happiness of others. May I live in equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and delusion. May I be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May I know happiness and the root of happiness. May I live in sympathetic joy, rejoicing in the happiness of others. May I live in equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and delusion. May I be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May I know happiness and the root of happiness. May I live in sympathetic joy, rejoicing in the happiness of others. May I live in equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and delusion. Brené Brown is well known for her research on vulnerability, shame, and courage. She says that the natural result of trauma is this propensity to armor up so that we don't have to feel vulnerable. The ironic thing is that actually being vulnerable is what leads to things I think I want the most, like intimacy, trust, belonging. I believe that beginning with myself, if I can extend this compassion to myself, then I can know the truth of what's really going on with me and extend loving compassion to myself. I get to heal the trauma. I found that as I'm able to extend this compassion to myself, that it becomes easier to do that with others. I'll tell you another story of how this helped me. So I've been at the monastery for about a month and a half, and it's a pretty rigorous schedule. You get up about 4:35, go to the Zendo about half an hour later, meditate for a couple of sessions of 35 minutes walking in between, go down to breakfast. Either you're working all day or you're meditating all day. There's really very little free time. So I've been doing this rigorous schedule for about a month and a half. And then something happened and I got angry. Now, what was the remarkable thing to me of that is not that I got angry, because angry is kind of my go-to, but that it had gone a whole month and a half with not getting angry at all. It wasn't like I was suppressing it and trying to not be there. It was just I wasn't angry. Nothing came up. And I thought, wow, like what happened? How did I do that? And I realized that part of how I did that was that I didn't have an opinion about how anything should, the way anything should be. So, what to do now? So the first thing I did was I felt the anger. I felt the intensity of that burning sensation. And then I began applying the four immeasurables. I just said it to myself over and over again, first extending it to myself because I realized how miserable I was. And then I would, in my mind, I would extend it out to the other person with whom I was angry. And I just kept doing that over and over again, kind of wherever I was. I would have moments of silence, but I just did it as much as I could because I was pretty miserable. So after a day or two, I noticed that that intensity of the anger lessened, and I was actually able to address the situation with the person with whom I was angry. So I was able to do it. I was able to transform a situation. I was able to see the root of my suffering and then apply the medication of the Buddha, and it helped, which I think is so awesome. So this is a meditation that you can do on your feet. You can do it on your cushion. You can do it on your feet. It's one that you can help gain some perspective on a situation. No matter what, it's never a bad idea to wish relief from suffering for myself and others. So coming back to this idea of healing trauma with the help of the Buddha, there are tools that I've gained in my training that have helped me navigate a way that I can feel good about. I've shared one of them with you today. It's kind of embarrassing that it's taken me 63 years to feel like I'm growing up, but better late than never. Being able to sit in meditation, to find ways to both calm myself and look deeply at the root of my suffering, has made a difference in my life. I would recommend it. I hope that you get to hug your demons, embrace the parts of yourselves that you're not so crazy about. Look at yourself tenderly and know how lovable and worthy of love you are. Even though we live in a world of impermanence, there is so much beauty and love right here, right now. May we all be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May we all know happiness and the root of happiness. May we live in sympathetic joy, rejoicing in the happiness of others. May we live in equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and delusion. So at the end of talks at the Zen Center, we do a thing we call it dedicating the merit. And then we recite the Bodhisattva vows. I'd like to do that now. May our intention equally penetrate every being in place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it.